Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it is a Tuesday. It is Super Bowl week. We just happen to be in L.A., and it's out east in Tampa. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. 1 year ago, Joy, did we go to the Super Bowl? Was that last year in Miami?
Yep.
Okay, last year we were there in Miami, and there was a guy with a bullhorn screaming of religious.
It was the, I mean, I'm impressed with you all the time, but I was really very impressed. Because you did not miss a beat.
Well, Miami's full of a lot of different stuff, and you have to overcome Miami a little bit when you're broadcasting live in Miami.
That's true. There were like thousands of people, but it wasn't so much the people. Like, they were literally, it was a bullhorn, like trying to save souls.
Yeah.
I was like, which.
And I'm like, hey.
We're saved. Let's go.
I'm entertaining America. You can save America. Let's just make this work.
Right.
So we are Andy Reid, coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, will join us in about 30 minutes from now. So it does feel like the Packers season's over and they're still making news. There was Aaron after the game. Then we see Aaron yesterday in the back of a pickup truck. Funny video. And now a former teammate, TJ Lang, came out yesterday in a radio station and talked about Aaron Rodgers is hell-bent on revenge for Green Bay. Here it is.
I think he's going to be hell-bent on some revenge, man. Mm-hmm. I think he was quietly pissed when they took Jordan Love a year ago. I think he's going to make them pay, man. I think he's going to want some sort of new deal where they guarantee a couple more years for him, security-wise, being in Green Bay. I don't think he wants to go anywhere, but I think he's going to hold their feet to the fire and say, hey, you're going to keep me around. A, you're going to pay me, and B, you're going to bring in some players that I want to play with where we can take this next leap.
I'm not bothered by any of that. In review, A, Aaron Rodgers a little upset they had needs and drafted a quarterback. I get that. B, he wants them to finally go all in. Yeah, that'd be nice. And a C, he wants to get paid his actual value and potentially get more security. I'm okay with that. That doesn't sound like revenge. It sounds like impatience. It sounds like leverage. Here's the problem. Is that Seattle and Tampa and the Saints and the 49ers and this weekend the Rams, all the teams he's battling to get through in the NFC, have all been, over the last 4 to 5 to 6 years, hyper-aggressive. Big swings. Jamal Adams, Carlos Dunlap, Emmanuel Sanders, big swings. Matt Stafford, now a Ram. And the Packers went out and once spent a little money on Za'Darius Smith, a nice player. Like, I get it. The reason Aaron and Green Bay are always in the news, because this is why it's the most unique relationship in the NFL. And this is not all Aaron's fault. In fact, I back Aaron on this. The Packers and Aaron are driven by two different things. And it's not like that with Mahomes in Kansas City. It's not like that with Brady, Bucks, or Patriots. It's not like that with any other quarterback in the league. But Green Bay and Aaron are driven by two different things. Green Bay is driven by fear, which is such a drag when you're a rock star. They're driven by fear. They don't want to be irrelevant. They don't have an owner. It's owned by the community. And when Vince Lombardi left, they went 25 years and they had 2 playoff appearances. I grew up and the Packers were irrelevant before Favre. Nobody talked about the Packers post-Lombardi to Favre. It was Cowboys. It was the Washington football team. If you looked around the NFC, it was Philadelphia. It was Chicago for a while in the 90s. They were irrelevant. And they're fear-based. And everything is to – that's why they – go look at last year's draft. It was all about fear. Let's get Jordan Love. You know he wouldn't going to play for 3 years, but it was, we just don't want to not have a quarterback. We remember when we didn't. Nobody talks about us for 25 years. And then in the second round, they get a running back. Did they need a running back? No, they had two great running backs. It was to protect them when Aaron Jones now is a free agent. It was all about protecting, playing it safe, putting away your retirement, paying off your house. Aaron's not driven by that. Aaron's the California kid. He's aspirational. He is hedge fund. He is big swing. He is going for it. He's the rock star with these super conservative parents, and it wears him out. And I side with Aaron on this. Green Bay is the smallest city that when they, there's three or four times they've been irrelevant. Bart Starr, Favre, Rodgers. When they didn't have quarterbacks, nobody cared about them. And that matters when you don't have an owner. And you are the smallest market, and you own the team. It's all fear-based nonsense, which wears me out. They're constantly building for that retirement. They put money in their pension. And Aaron's a rock star. He's throwing money all over. He's an angel investor taking big swings. And so 30 years, Green Bay has two Super Bowls. That's with Favre and Rodgers. So you can win them, but they should have three times that. And what's really troubling for Aaron is this wasn't really as noticeable when he entered the league. But because of so many young, aggressive general managers, John Schneider in Seattle is aggressive, and John Lynch in San Francisco, and Les Snead in Los Angeles, you get these young, Howie Roseman, Philadelphia, these young, super aggressive general managers making deals, and Green Bay's always sitting on their hands. So it gets jammed into Aaron's face. I'd be upset too. You're being compared to Russell Wilson and compared to Tom Brady and compared to great quarterbacks. But those guys have owners and teams with the same agenda, with the same aspirations. Green Bay is all about fear. It's all about putting it away, protecting yourself, never getting caught without a quarterback. It's wearing him out. I don't think any of that. Listen, since Aaron last got to a Super Bowl, half the NFC has gotten there. And he hasn't again. And in that time, he's inarguably, I mean, maybe Russell Wilson, but he's been the best NFC quarterback on average over that time. So when I hear TJ Lang talking about that stuff, that doesn't sound unrealistic. He's worn out. He's driven by big swings, going for it. He's kind of an aspirational California kid, and he's in the smallest city that's petrified to be irrelevant, and I think he's over it. I would be too. Now, obviously, Sunday, Tom Brady, Mahomes. Brady is a little bit, I guess you could say it's less authentic, but we don't know that. Maybe Tom's just a nice guy. Tom always takes the high road. Tom's very gracious. His teammates love him. Around the league, he's revered. Tom always, you know, he'll yell at a teammate on the sidelines, but that's in-game stuff. Nobody cares about that. But after the game, there's no meltdowns. Yesterday, he's asked about Belichick, and it's classic Tom. He's very sweet.
I have a great relationship with him. And, again, I'm just incredibly grateful for, you know, what he's meant in my life as a coach. And he was everything you could ask for as a player. And, you know, I love my time. I had two incredible decades there. And, you know, my football journey took me to a different place. And I certainly could never have accomplished the things in my career without his support and his teachings.
It's almost corny. But yet he's one of the least liked NFL players. We still love Favre, love MJ, love Peyton Manning. They had flaws. You want to know why a lot of people hate Tom? He's never needed us. Supermodel wife. He doesn't even need Belichick. He's rich. Wife's rich. Kids will be. He never needs us to embrace him. Tiger Woods' life, full of controversy, full of unredeemable things. But he won the Masters in 2019. People call it their favorite sports moment of the year. Some of the decade, it was mine. Because Tiger felt like it was a little bit of a comeback. Tiger needed us. LeBron, he was a villain, goes to Cleveland, writes the letter, vulnerable. It's easy to root for. But Tom's different. Tom's continuously ascending. He never needs our comfort. He never truly stumbles. In my lifetime, he's the only great American athlete that has never asked for our help or needed our help. Even Michael Jordan, we saw him for years, the wrong coach, get tackled viciously by the Detroit Pistons. We saw him try in baseball and fail. The awful murder of his dad. We lived through his pain. There were times, the comfort. You saw the anguish, hugging the trophy, laying on the floor when he won. Everybody wants to be needed. Everybody's had to overcome something. The big beef with Tom is he was once drafted in the sixth round. I mean, even our superheroes, Spider-Man, his uncle dies, Batman, their parents die, Superman. Basically, he got shoved to another planet. His planet blew up, kryptonite. I mean, everybody, superheroes, the parents dying, orphaned in another planet. Is this device or a rock or kryptonite? Tom Brady, his only true rival now is time, and he's beating that. And he doesn't need our help. And he created his own avocado ice cream. We want to hug you. We want you to need us. And Tom never does. I saw something. You know, Mahomes is interesting. When Mahomes first came out, I said, can we slow down a little on Mahomes? Let's win some games. And so I think there's this sense that, you know, I've been kind of rough on Mahomes, or he's incredible. I just think the media, I understand fans, they're not contextualizing stuff. Fans want to, they just want to root for their guy and buy their jersey, and I totally get that. I thought the media got a little ahead of themselves with Mahomes. It's never been the no-look passes or the arm or the mobility. Mahomes has one great quality, which John Elway had, and I loved Elway, which Brady has, and I love Brady. And it's an incredible quality, and I don't know if you can create it. I think it may be innate. I maybe think it's parenting. I maybe think it's in you. It's personality-driven, and it's my favorite thing about Patrick Mahomes, and I'll talk about that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Mahomes, and I was thinking about of the many quality, every quarterback, great quarterback in my life had a great quality. You know, Dan Marino had this incredible release. Favre, you know, was the gunslinger. Peyton Manning was, you know, like intellectually line of scrimmage, getting you in and out of plays. My favorite quality of Mahomes, and I don't know if it's coachable. I don't think it is. I don't think it's teachable. It's not his arm. I've seen better, believe it or not. It's not his no-look passes. I'd rather he look. It's not his mobility. I've seen better. John Elway had this. Brady has this. And Mahomes has this. Score's irrelevant. Their body language doesn't change. They're good after interceptions. They're not bothered by duress. And I'll give you an example. As great as Aaron Rodgers is, when Aaron Rodgers throws an interception in a game, just one as a starter, he's sub-500. He's a bad quarterback. His passer rating's in the mid-80s. When he doesn't throw an interception, clean pocket, better team, comfortable, he's virtually unbeatable. He's arguably the best quarterback of all time. Mahomes, when he throws an interception, is 15-4. In fact, in five games that he's thrown multiple interceptions, he's got a winning record there too. That's very Elway and Brady. Tom Brady threw three interceptions in consecutive drives on the road at Lambeau and won the game. I don't think you can teach it. The three quarterbacks in my life where the score didn't matter, interceptions didn't matter, Elway, Brady, and Mahomes, is when I watch him play, he plays with a joy. He's not bothered by mistakes. He's got this inner scoreboard of confidence that's unspoken. I don't know if you can coach it. I don't know if you can teach it, but it's really rare. A lot of guys get tight. Peyton Manning was great. He got tight often in big spots. But Elway had it. Brady has it. As great as Aaron is, he doesn't. And Mahomes has it in volume. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Well, last night the Lakers were in Atlanta.
Oh boy.
To play the Hawks. Lakers won 107-99 in what was actually a good game, but that is not the story of the game this morning, at least on the internets. The headline was an interaction between LeBron and courtside hecklers during the fourth quarter. Now, obviously, if you hadn't seen the game, this would be very strange to see during a pandemic. People are heckling. Most arenas aren't even having fans in there.
Yeah.
But nope, they managed to get ejected. Four fans actually managed to get ejected from the arena. One woman was seen, there she is, pulling down her mask. Because she felt like people couldn't hear her when she was yelling at LeBron, and it was quite the spectacle.
Now, Housewives of Atlanta, some of the people there, are they cast members or something?
I don't know. I've never seen or heard of her a day in my life.
She was feeling it though. Now, whose fault is this? Who do we got to blame?
Well, look, I think that hecklers are ridiculous in any kind of space.
Yeah.
Hecklers. Now, fans, you can boo, you can yell, whatever. But when it comes to a place where the referees feel the need to throw you out, you've now passed into heckler, which is obnoxious. Literally no one, despite what she may think, has showed up to this game to see her.
Yeah, she was paying, and all her friends, to watch LeBron perform.
Right.
He wasn't paying for her to be there.
No.
So when you go to a game, nobody cares about you.
No one.
Like, you're the heckler. She's feeling herself here. She is feeling herself. Nobody's there to see you.
Not one person. Not one single person came to
the
game.
I know you got courtside seats, so you are special tonight, but nobody cares about you.
No, I find it ridiculous, but what commenced afterwards is what really was what put it over the top for me. Like, people get thrown out of games all the time, and you and I have talked about this before. Like, hecklers are the worst. It's obnoxious for everyone around you. You're literally the worst. You're the worst. You think you're the coolest. You're the opposite. You're the worst. But when it comes to, like, player safety, you remember the guy that, like, came on the court after Russell Westbrook?
Weird.
Like, it's insane because people are crazy. Like, what are you supposed to do in that spot? And I thought Westbrook actually handled it really well, because if he'd have honestly put his hands on him, I wouldn't have felt bad for this guy at all.
And also, you have to remember is that more than any sport, hockey fans, there's a shield.
Right.
NFL fans, there's distance. Baseball fans, there's often a lot of distance. In the NBA, there's about 40 seats that are courtside, and the players do recognize you. I've said this. I do courtside maybe once a year.
Right.
And I can always tell the players look by, and they're like, LeBron talked to me.
It's very intimate.
It's very intimate. And by the way, it's such an honor to sit courtside that I tend to be more vocal courtside because I know the players can hear me. And I'll say occasionally something, like, funny.
But you're not heckling them.
No.
You're never going to allow it to get to a space where you're tossed from the game in a theatric way. This is absurd.
I always think there's something. I've said this about trolls. If you're on the internet trolling people, is it possible? I'm not saying this about these people, but when you're on the internet trolling people, it's a little bit of a mental health issue, right? Like, would you ever do that?
I'm a very busy person.
Isn't everybody?
The mentality that I would, the idea that I would take time out of my day to make an account, let alone sit there and type things to a stranger. No, I have many things to do. I have goals, aspirations.
I think it's a mental health issue.
I would not be sitting here across from you if I had that kind of mentality. I find it literally
bizarre.
Wild. Yes. But what she said afterwards is the troll part. Look, as someone who may or may not have thrown hands before, multiple times, I find it egregious that she's saying she's going to bleep LeBron up.
Oh, like, Jesus. Oh, God.
Honey, get your life together. He's a 6'8", 260-pound man. And I also do not like the visual of this white girl calling LeBron the B word, and I'm going to bleep you up.
God.
None of this.
Yeah.
Have a seat courtside, Karen, but not in the building because you're not allowed in.
Thank you.
Deshaun Watson has made it clear that he wants to be traded from the Texans. There have been plenty of reports about how unhappy he is with the organization. And Brett Favre doesn't think this is the way that Watson should be handling the situation.
Kind of old school. I think you play, you get paid a ton of money to do a certain job and just do it and let the chips fall where they may. I think we make too much money to voice an opinion, but I'm not saying he's wrong. I think it's a different day and time, and it'll be interesting to see how the organization handles it.
Didn't Brett like retire and then unretire and like hold the Packers and multiple teams hostage while he decided what he was doing?
I generally agree that go play and just do it. But I do believe I think what's happened in Houston is cultish. And I think Deshaun Watson was lied to. So I say, I always support mobility for players when the contract is up. I've always supported athletes. I've been
and
mobile.
The franchise tag is ridiculous as well.
But I think what you have here, let's be honest about it, it's not common. It's rare. We have a pastor running the team. They don't know what they're doing. The owner and the former pastor who now runs it have a relationship which turns off many in the building. They could literally not find a coach. So sometimes there are situations in life that are just rare, and I see it differently. Overwhelmingly, I'm like, go play for your team and do it. But I understand Joe Burrow, if he'd have come out and said, I won't play for them.
Right.
As long as the NFL has the franchise tag and the owners win that and they have it, then I'm going to support players in dysfunctional areas who feel trapped. And I think Deshaun simply feels lied to and trapped in a ridiculous cultish organization.
All of that is true. I also do find it a little ironic that it's coming from Brett Favre and that, you know, he didn't do the exact same thing, but like, you know, you asserted your will when you wanted to your own way.
He was needy.
Right. But I agree with you. This is an outlier situation with Deshaun Watson. And it also, Deshaun has built up a lot of leverage with the community, with fans around the league, and that he's not only a great player but also a great person. And he's not somebody that is drama. Like every single year he's asking for something different. So this is not a situation where he's doing it the way that Harden did it. Like
he's not
showing up, and like he's actually saying he's going to show up. He just wants to be in a situation where he has an opportunity to win. And the Texans, I believe that organizations have an obligation to put the best product out there for the decisions that they make in the same way that players do. Like, what the Houston Texans have done at the top levels is absurd. Nobody would want to be in this situation, and all kinds of players are coming out and saying that they support him. I'm with you. An outlier situation is what this is, and he deserves to be able to assert his leverage. I don't care about the fact that he signed a contract. This situation is absurd. It's a pastor running the team.
It's come on. I mean, I'm not saying everybody's going to get the Chiefs situation where you get a great GM and a Hall of Fame coach and a great Hunt family. That's rare, too. Brady got Belichick and Dante Scarnecchia. That's rare, too. But it'd be nice to have a somewhat functional environment. And I think it was more functional 4 or 5 years ago. I think it's just got increasingly dysfunctional.
So Gronk was a key component to the Patriots' success for 9 years. And while he and Belichick got along very well when he was in New England, there hasn't been much communication since. He said, I've always had a great relationship with Bill, but ever since I got to the Bucs, there hasn't been any contact.
Well, are we surprised? I don't think Gronk and Belichick are the same dude.
No, but like any so here's the thing. Like, an absolute statement is what I pay attention to. To say like, oh, we haven't talked as much, or like, oh yeah, like he texts me for my birthday or something. Like, but to not have any contact is something else altogether. Now, we know this is how Bill is, right?
Yes.
Like, he's not a cuddly guy. He doesn't do the whole like relationship thing. And the reason he's able to be so cutthroat in the way, or like move on from players years earlier than most people think they should be moved on from, is because he operates this way. Like, he operates this way with everybody. Did it with Tom, and clearly he's doing this with Gronk. It also might have something to do with the way that, you know, Gronk retired and then, you know,
there's nobody less Belichick than Gronk. This is the one.
True.
There are certain people that leave the party and it's just like, you're not going to ever connect again. You know, you went to college with some people that were in your
you guys
group.
Had a great time. And then, but it's like, you know, moving forward, we're probably going to have different paths in life. And that's fine. You know, life is about experiences.
That's right.
I don't think that Gronk has any grudges about it. And Bill probably doesn't either. All I know is whenever the Last Dance version of the Patriots comes out in 20 years from now, that's going to be some must-see television.
Yep. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Well, he is gotten into a class now that he deserved 15 years ago. People weren't paying as much attention, where he was winning the NFC and getting to Super Bowls without superstar quarterbacks. Andy Reid wins with everybody. And when we've seen Bill Belichick even now struggle a little without Brady, right? So he's one of my favorite coaches. Andy Reid, Kansas City Chiefs, is now joining us live, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So first of all, I find this fascinating. You are 26-5 off a bye. That doesn't even make sense. It's like you're coaching at Alabama. So my theory is you're one of these guys that sits up at night and you're drawing plays all the time and you got little tricks. And if you give you another week, you drop more tricks. So a lot of it's that you love to drop tricks and plays and everybody in the league hates to face you off a bye. That has to be some of it, right? Your tricks and your schemes in that extra week.
Well, Colin, we try to have some fun with it. I'm blessed to have some good coaches that help me with it, and I still enjoy doing it. So we get in there, we grind a little bit, and come up with some pretty good things, and we hope they work. We've been fortunate where a few of them have.
Yeah. So at the end of the year, Andy, I kept saying over and over, I said, what's going on with the Chiefs in December? They're just not quite firing. And I theorized, I said, when you're able to score so quickly, I wonder if it's hard to create urgency with guys. You have great players, you score quickly. And it was almost as if bored is the wrong word, but it didn't feel like your guys just knew they were better. But your December was kind of interesting. Go back. Were you unhappy with how you guys played in December?
Well, we started fast in most of those games, and then we had to kind of put it together in the second half. And some of that is what I was calling on the offensive side and maybe not staying as aggressive. Our guys do a pretty good job with staying in tune with the game. The thing I was probably most proud of was just how we finished the games. Just
right.
It would come down to the fourth quarter, and we were able to put the things away. But it wasn't as much boredom as it probably was just giving the guys a little bit more juice to play with.
In my life, John Elway was the first quarterback. We both kind of grew up with him in our generation, where John was almost better from behind than he was with a lead. Brady became the next guy, where Tom's better in the second half of Super Bowls trailing than he is in the first quarter. Patrick Mahomes feels like the third, where he is 15-4 or 15-5 after an interception. He falls behind. He plays with a joy. It's very rare. Most great quarterbacks aren't that. Did you notice it early? Is it from parenting? Is it just innate? Like, he never changes his body language, Andy. He never changes his aesthetic or his style. When did you first notice that?
Yeah, right when we got him. He's got a certain enthusiasm about him, a childish enthusiasm. People always ask me to compare him to Brett Favre, and I'm going, maybe that's it. Maybe that part's it. They're different guys, obviously. All the guys are different. So, but he has that where you could be playing in the backyard. You could be playing, at the CVS parking lot. You could be playing in one of these beautiful stadiums that we have. And it's all the same. You're getting the same pitcher. And he comes to work every day with that. And he busts his tail to make sure things are right. And he brings everybody together that way. So he's a great uniter of your football team, and the guys on the offensive side get to do it with him every day.
Obviously, you are considered the great play designer of my life. You and Bill Walsh, you create, you play design. Are there times you design these plays that you've ever just said to Mahomes, kind of go with what you feel after the design? Like, is there a little ad lib built into this because he is so gifted?
I'll tell you what, Colin, he's a great ad libber. And I don't have to say a word to him. So I just want him to play the game. So we always talk about letting their personality show. Let your personality show. Well, that's his personality. He's going to take and make the play the best it possibly can be. Just innately. And so I don't want to disrupt that. I don't want to get in the way of that. Just you let him go and let his greatness show.
So you face Brady a lot. You've had some success against him, but you get late into games, and I'll watch you on the sidelines against Brady. It's no fun if he has the ball. It's just no fun. So when you know that you're not going to fool him, I mean, he's seen everything. is there kind of a way to face all these years of facing him? Is there a trick? Is there something? I mean, what do you tell your defensive guys? What do you tell your coordinators? Any little nugget that works against him?
Well, you've got to play. You got to play four quarters against him. And then it's likewise on the other side. There's just never enough points that you're going to be able to score against that guy. I mean, you got to keep going. And if you don't, he's already proven that he can do that. That's what's made him a great player over all these years. So with our defense, Spags and his guys have done that. They've played four quarters of good football against them, and we've had a little success. But it's amazing that this guy's 43 years old, Colin. You know, he's 43 years old, and I had a chance to play against him, or my team in Philadelphia did, 16 years ago, and it doesn't look any different to me. This is what he is. I mean, there's some of this avocado ice cream, man. I got to get some.
Yeah, we all like ice cream. Just put some avocados in it, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's right.
So last year, you've been to now, this will be your third Super Bowl. I asked Jimmy Johnson this yesterday. You're very good off buys. It's a game the world's watching. Do you ever have to say to yourself, hey, Andy, don't overcoach here. I got great players. You know, sometimes that extra week, there's going to be pressure in this game that some of your players, you know, some are, it's hard. It's a different game, Andy. Do you coach a Super Bowl slightly differently? Do you think about the pressure? Does any of that come into mind?
Well, you know, it's an exciting atmosphere, and it's going to bring out the best in some guys, and other guys, they're going to have to warm up to it. So I get that. We try to get in our plays during the week before this week. So last week we got in the majority of the game plan, and that way we can go back and we can review it and go through it again, one more rep on it and so on as we work through. There's a lot of media obligations this week, even not being in Tampa. So I'm glad we got the game plan in. The other thing I tell the coaches is, don't tinker with it. Just let it go. You got it in. You put your best stuff in, and let's roll with it. And you start adding just what you're saying. You start adding things into these things can grow to a monster, and then you can't go function.
Yeah. God, look at that last year. Isn't that amazing? What'd you do after you won last year? What'd you do that night? What'd you do the rest of the night?
Yeah, well, they have a huge party, man. Pitbull was there. Colin, this joker is however old. He's not that young. However old he is, I feel like he's been going for a long time here. And he went till 4:30 in the morning. And I said, if he can do it, I can do it, man. I'm hanging right with him. Except the only difference was he was dancing. I was sitting.
By the way, do you worry at all? Chris you know, Jones is talking about a little dynasty stuff. Do you ever say to your guys, stop, let's be a dynasty before we talk about a dynasty?
Yeah, you know, Chris Jones is a big personality, man, and you love that about him. But you're going to get a couple of those fluffy things come out of there, man, that you just kind of, you shake your head. But if you know the kid, you kind of laugh it off and go with it. He comes out every day, man. He's got a smile on his face, and he just goes. He's the epitome of a defensive lineman. If a Martian came down and said, show me a defensive lineman, besides Jason Taylor, I'd show him this guy. Those two are completely opposite, Joey. I'm just telling you, completely opposite. But I'd show him Chris. I'll tell you, he's a beauty.
Yeah. Andy, so are you. We love having you on the show. Can't wait. We'll be watching. So will America, man. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Joy, hello. You look great back there. And having to deal with Colin, man, you got a special place in heaven, babe.
Thank you, Coach. Good luck Sunday.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Andy Reid. I really do think this is one of the – not every dynasty is – they're not a dynasty yet. And what is a dynasty? I think, to me, three feels like three-peat, three-dynasty. They're kind of built to win this year and next year. We'll talk about this later. Then the numbers get – difficult. And they, you know, Brett Veach did a really good job. So they give Mahomes the greatest contract ever. But he was smart about it. He's like, listen, just give us about two more years where we're not choked financially. So they're not this year. They're not next year. Then you get into the 30s. It's a little high. Then you get into the 40s. So this thing should go Sunday, another year. then you're going to start getting into Tyreek Hill's contract is up and Travis Kelce's 34 and the offensive tackles are getting older and Honey Badger. You start looking at the numbers here, you're going to be good Sunday and next year. And then there's going to be really difficult conversations. Now, the good news is they draft well. Yeah, as long as Andy's there and Brett Veach is there, the offense will be fine. But there's those defensive linemen, Frank Clark's like 25 large a year. Like those defensive linemen, there are not many great ones. They've got two, and they pay them a ton. And it's hard to keep both once your quarterback's in the 30, 40 million category. Coming up next, what's the public betting Sunday? May surprise you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Andy Reid stopped by. Just infinitely likable. Just the opposite of Belichick. Belichick, listen, I lived in Connecticut for the whole, you know, half the thing. I'm not likable at all. Grumpy, mean to media, which nobody cares about, right? But it's like just difficult. Even when he gave Brady a game ball. Like
it was so awkward.
Oh, so awkward. And he's just like fun and not all, by the way, not all dynasties. Like the Miami Heat, I don't know if it qualifies as a dynasty, but it was fun. It was big personalities.
It was fun for me.
Yeah.
The rest of the
Warriors,
country hated it.
Warriors, Shaq, Kobe was fun. I don't think the Pistons were fun.
I don't know. You have a different perspective on dynasties, though. You have the ability to appreciate greatness. Most people just want to tear it down and then build it back up. Like, most people do not enjoy. All you could hear was complaining about the Warriors for years.
Yeah, but they were
wonderful to watch.
I don't understand. I always rooted for Tiger. Am I a bandwagon fan because I love excellence? I'm always looking for the next great.
No, I don't think you're insecure.
Well, I'm looking for great.
But you understand the mentality, of course, because you've been around a long time. The mentality is you can be great, but not too great. Once you get too great, we got to tear you down, so then you can then become great again. Like that's the cycle. So if you're not amazing, then everyone loves you. But as soon as you get like past that threshold, and they're gonna start to, it's gonna happen. It always happens. I'm not that way. I enjoy greatness, but I'm not, you know, insecure in myself. So others can shine while I shine as well. And you have that same quality.
Yeah, I think just I'm looking for the next great circus, the next great act. That's why I root for mobility. You guys aren't excited when Stafford goes to the Rams? Like, that's just
wonderful.
I sat there all Saturday night. I couldn't go to sleep. I'm like, this could be incredible if it works. I don't know. To me, I'm looking for, I think dynasties are great. Now, I don't think they're all fun. I think Alabama's been boring. I think New England was kind of boring. It was based on efficiency and intelligence. And
well,
it's
the style matters. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Aesthetically, I don't think New England was that fun. Their uniforms are boring. You know, Foxborough's cold and gray and the whole thing wasn't that fun. I've said this before. I miss the Miami Hurricanes and USC football and college football. I think the sport does not feel as big when the Miami Hurricanes were great and the USC Trojans, and then you had these sort of NFL cities with a lot of swag and a lot of trash talk and a big coach and Jimmy Johnson and Pete Carroll. The sport now feels very small and very insular and very regional. I like big, crazy villains, and I think everybody does. They don't like to admit it. By the way, we went and looked on Fox Bet. There's more money bet on Kansas City, but there's more bets on Tampa. So my guess is that means little bets, more bets are on Tampa. That's the public. That's you and me betting. The majority of the people are betting Tampa and Brady. The sharps, the wise guys, the big money is in on Kansas City. But Kansas City feels like they should be here. What's fascinating, my say it out loud theory. Before you do something stupid, say it out loud. And you talk yourself out of it. Just think about Tampa. If I'd have told you this happens before the season, it's miraculous they're here. Number one, Tom Brady goes to a new team, but due to a pandemic, they get no OTAs and no preseason. That ain't good. By the way, his head coach, after a couple ugly performances early, calls him out. Oh, by the way, they melt down on Thursday Night Football, 13 penalties. Tom Brady crushes his teams publicly. They also lost at home to division rival New Orleans at home, 38-3. And then in Brady's biggest game of the year, a playoff game, he throws three picks on three consecutive possessions. And they're here. They shouldn't be here. It is Tampa's whole season has been defined by overcoming. overcoming an old school coach and an old quarterback and no OTAs and no preseason and a meltdown and getting crushed by the Saints and Brady with three picks. Arians called out Brady, if you want to call it that, and they're here. It's just a year of overcoming, and that's why I give them a puncher's chance against Kansas City. They're great down. They're great trailing. They've just kind of figured out a way to get here, and those teams are no fun to play. They're just going to fight until the last second. Hour two next.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.